Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use. Welcome to Playful Beginnings. Hey, Christy.
Hey, Maggie.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm so excited to continue kind of talking about working with parents.
Yes.
And so we were kind of sharing, maybe we should go over kind of what we do tell parents about play therapy, or like how to prep for their child to be a part of play therapy.
The things that I often forget to say, but then remind myself.
Yes.
One of the big ones, I think there are a couple that I try and always remember, is like one, that this needs to be like a confidential space for them.
Yes.
And then
the difference between confidentiality and privacy, because legally the parent is the client according to the law, but then there is a difference of what we're going to share and not share with parents.
Right. And so I kind of, like I said before, relate it back to their own therapy, and you wouldn't want everyone to know about what you're doing, and then you wouldn't really share anything.
Right.
And so that's, I kind of want to do that. The other one is to try and bring like them not in nice clothes.
Clothes that they can get dirty in.
Clothes they can get dirty in.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah. And that they're comfortable in.
Right. Yeah. Because you want them to play.
Yes. And not worry about getting messy or ruining an outfit.
Yeah.
Or worried about how their parent is going to react.
Right.
That they got messy.
Because I had one, this child was lovely, and so many things that I had to end up talking to the parents about.
Yeah.
Because she would paint her hands and feet. It was a very sensory.
Yep.
And with every color. And so it was just very messy. And so having to make sure, and the parents were great.
Yep.
And they understood. I haven't had any parents ever really get mad at me for their kids getting messy, or I don't
think I've gotten parents mad. I think they've been concerned about maybe how messy their kid is.
Yeah.
But they're not mad at me. But they might bring it up in a parent consultation later.
Yeah.
Or frustrated.
Yeah.
That was a new shirt or something like that. That
yeah.
now has blue paint on it.
Mm-hmm.
I do tell parents, I try as much as I can to make sure the materials in the room can be washed out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I do put soap in all of like my paint, if I have an easel with paint.
Smart.
In particular, blue and black don't come out as easily. They actually tend to be colors I use less on in my easel painting, unless a child specifically asks for blue. It's, for some reason, it stains different.
You're so thoughtful.
No, only from experience. And remember, I used to work with kids in a different setting. And so it's things I've learned. It's also why, you know, when you get it on your hands and you try to wash it out, you still have like a blue mark. It's because it's harder to get out. I also have tricks about that.
How do you get it out?
So
Dawn soap, I feel like, is...
Dawn soap is great.
We should be sponsored.
Right. And hydrogen peroxide.
Interesting.
Yeah. If you put a little hydrogen peroxide or Sprite.
Sprite.
If you soak it in Sprite and then wash it, for some reason the bubbles help release some of the stuff, but then it's kind of sticky. So you have to make sure you wash it.
Also, hairspray.
Oh, I haven't tried that one.
I got ink on my roommate's couch and I freaked out. Scary.
I once dumped, when I worked in the hospital, I was bringing a kid a stained glass activity, you know, that stained glass paint, and I had a wool dress on.
Oh,
and
wow.
The kid was having a hard time opening it. So I opened it and it splattered all down the front of me. And I was like,
yeah.
It was a dry clean only outfit.
Oh, geez.
Which you should never wear working with kids, by the way, as a therapist. That's just a bad idea. You're asking for, I'm not saying don't do it. Just know.
Just know it's what you wear.
Yeah.
Well, at school, you're poor in school, right?
Correct.
Like I didn't have any money, and I got like a new pair of jeans I loved them, and I wore them to session, and I got paint on them. I was like, that was me. That was my fault. I did that. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I don't ever wear my I have like a pair of shoes that I love and I won't ever wear them.
To the playroom.
To the playroom. I also wish that we could wear scrubs. I really wish that we could wear, you know, like scrubs, because one, they're comfortable, and two, you get messy.
You do. But I do, I'm on that train, and parents need to see us as professionals. And so if we dress in ways that look like we're wearing our pajamas, because sometimes scrubs can look like you're wearing your pajamas. Yes. There's also some really nice scrubs that look dressier that I think definitely. Or I have a friend who's a play therapist, and she wears these really fancy yoga pants.
Oh, yeah.
But they look like pressed trousers.
Yeah.
But they're yoga pants.
And you also
she's comfy. She can move around.
Yeah.
And she appears professional.
You also have to be wary of kids being scared of doctors.
Yes.
So if you're wearing scrubs, they might be scared. But
or nurses or healthcare professionals.
But yeah, so that's like, so not only do I make sure I'm wearing stuff that's I'm okay getting messy, letting parents know.
Kids about getting messy.
I try and prep them. Don't ask them what they did or what they talked about. And that's really hard. And even as a parent, when my own child goes to play therapy, I have to like hold my tongue. I'm like, what did you guys do? And I talk to them about trying not to come into the room after they've played in the room, because if we look at it that toys are their words and play is their language, it's like almost like a transcript of their session. And so being really careful of like going into a different room, or if the child wants, I'll get the child's permission, even when I needed to talk to my own kids' play therapist, I was like, are you, you know, I'd ask permission, like, are you okay with me going in, and trying to be respectful of that, that it might get worse before it gets better. That's a big one. And so really trying to help them. And most things I relate back to them as adults to help them kind of understand, you know, is that when you go to, if you've gone to therapy or if you're dealing with something and you start sharing it or bringing things up, it usually makes you sad. Yes. And it doesn't mean that it you don't feel better
after sharing it.
Yeah. It's just that in the process, it can be a lot.
Well, and I like how you're wording that. I worded it a little different, that just sometimes as they're feeling heard and understood, they might feel emotions more deeply, right? Or feel safer to express them. And sometimes those are the emotions you don't want them expressing so freely. So sometimes it can get worse. So like if anger is kind of what's been coming up, as we start to really like tap into what's under anger, they might feel freer to share their anger because it's safer to share it instead of it being so scary to share it. And so we might see an escalation in anger before it decreases. So we could have like a curve effect. And that might take a few sessions, but hang in there. If it's getting really bad, let me know immediately so that, you know, I can support you through that so that you're not,
you don't just yank them out.
You don't yank them out, or you are just making the assumption this isn't working, because that actually might be part of it working, is that they have more words around it. It feels safer to express it. That's part of the therapeutic process. As adults, we tend to hold our tongues because we know who we can share that with. Kids tend to share it with everyone.
Yeah. No, that's a really great point. I like that.
And so another thing I want parents to see the playroom. We walk around, I introduce them to the playroom. I let them touch the toys, ask questions about any toys in the playroom up front.
What do they usually ask you about?
Sometimes I'm not really sure what they think the playroom is going to look like, because I don't always do my intake in the playroom. Sometimes I'll do it in an adult space and then bring them into the playroom. They're surprised at how many toys. They're surprised at the aggression toys. Typically, or they might say something like, oh, my child doesn't play with this, or, you know, they don't do this, or, oh, they did that when they were younger, they don't play with it anymore. And before we go in, I kind of talk about all the areas, and there may be toys they like and not like, some they play with, some they don't play with, but they have the option at all times to play with many of the toys that they would like.
Usually it's the aggressive toys that they're kind of like, and toy guns. And so we have that conversation, and that ended up, did a research article on that, because I had a reaction to my own children like pew-pewing. Pew-pew seem to be the universal thing that kids do. Right. It's so funny. And so it's interesting, like kind of how I think that research really helped me as a parent, but also as a play therapist, and how do I explain it?
Yeah.
And what we found is that we just interviewed other play therapists,
yes,
is that those that did have it were much more grounded in theory of like, is this my personal belief that's having me struggle, or is this really like an extension of them being able to poise their words and play as their language? And then most of the people who did have it recognized that a lot of times it wasn't even used as a aggression. It's usually for relationship building and mastery.
Yep.
And so I can't think of many times where a child has used it in an aggressive way. It's usually we play cops and robbers together.
Right.
And so I tell parents that a lot of times
it's more imaginative.
It's more about like us engaging in a game mm-hmm. together, being able to try on different roles and stuff like that.
Yeah. I sometimes go there. It really depends on what the presenting,
mm-hmm.
like who the child is and how they're presenting, because I've seen it used retaliatory
mm-hmm.
before. And then I'll talk to parents about like, this is an opportunity for them to do it in a safe environment where I can reflect back
mm-hmm.
a limit around it and really give context to why like people aren't for shooting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're mad or not, people are not for harming or hurting, right? And so I can base it in reality for them where there's very little consequence than mm-hmm. if they're curious and they find it at home, or they're really angry and they go to that, and mm-hmm. we can go to other ways of expressing anger that would be more acceptable if that's mm-hmm. what they're worried about. Because I often yeah. say, tell me more about what you're worried about, this toy, and then there's been one or two times that I've actually taken it out of the playroom, which I said I would never do.
Yeah.
But after having a long conversation with the parent, I want to say I did not take it out to appease the parent. I took it out because their concern was really valid and that it did not feel like this toy would be helpful for this child. And so collectively, we decided that it would come out before their session. And then I would put it back on the shelf after. And sometimes I forgot. And I warn parents that that might happen, that I will do my very best to take it off the shelf. But it might be like an experience they had in the past right. or something where it might be triggering or mm-hmm. something like that. So I do think we have to be mindful.
Yes.
I've also had it come up in different cultural groups where like this yeah. may really not be acceptable within this cultural group, or the consequence for that is much greater. Mm-hmm. And so I'm also really mindful of that. So mm-hmm. if they do have a concern, I want them to talk to me about it, which is why I bring them into the playroom. And you have to set time to do that. You mm-hmm. can't, it's not on a fly like the last 2 minutes. Like you really have to say, we need at least 10 minutes. I want to give you time. If they take 2 minutes, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if things do come up, I want to make sure we have time to converse about it before we're out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah. And that's like, I think it brings up to culture, and I ask about culture mm-hmm. and identities, and I want to make sure that there's like representation in the yep. playroom. If there's anything that they think would be relevant culturally yep. that maybe we don't have that would be helpful, or that, you know, again, that like would need to is a cultural reference or, you know, yeah. whatever, if like the gun or
yeah.
something like that. Yeah.
As you were saying that, something popped in my mind and now it's popped out. Oh, about them not bringing toys from home.
Yeah.
That's another thing I encourage. Now, if they have a lovey or something that is a like transitional object, I do let them bring mm-hmm. that in. But parents and I have a conversation that that could be left behind sometimes in session. And like, how do you want to manage that?
Like if they leave the lovey.
If they leave the lovey or like a special stuffed animal. I know.
Molly would.
You would have to drive back break into a building to get her lovey.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lee's crawled through a trash bin for that.
Yeah, because it's so important.
It's so important.
So we do talk about that so yeah. that parents are really kind of mindful of those.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is also really important is that parents are going to ask about play therapy. Don't assume because they've chosen a play therapist, they have any understanding of yeah. play therapy. So you have to have your go-to statement about what is play therapy? How is it helpful?
Mm-hmm.
And I really encourage people. I was at a conference and I was at a play therapy conference, and D-Ray and Ahuline both worked at UNT at the time as faculty, did an activity where you repeated your kind of elevator speech over mm-hmm. and over and over again. So practice with family, friends, and say it multiple times in multiple settings until you have it down pat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really hard on the fly in the moment. Mm-hmm. You're going to mess it up if you are not practiced or you can't speak to it quickly, clearly. Right. Mm-hmm. But it should only be 1 to 2 minutes. Like you don't want yeah. to bore them. This is not a dissertation. This is not a thesis. This is not a lecture, right? It's just a quick, what is play therapy? How does play therapy help children? Yeah. But I do really encourage people to have a go-to statement about that, because that's a question.
Yeah.
That lots of parents ask in the intake. So yeah. tell me what you're going to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've talked about this before. Sometimes we don't value play
mm-hmm.
in our society. And so also like, knowing that question's going to get come and don't be triggered by it.
Yeah.
Right. So you just have to I sometimes will just say, yeah, a lot of people ask that question or are kind of confused because, you know, we look at kids and they play all the time. How is this different than how they would play at home or play with you? And then I go into why, instead of getting triggered by it, I just acknowledge it and use it as like a feeder into what we do, why we think play is so important for kids.
Yeah.
And how we're using that as a therapeutic tool in session. And so not explaining it like they would play with toys at home, but you have to really be able to share why this is therapeutic for kids or why we use it as a therapeutic intervention.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. And then there are going to be certain spaces where it's more, I guess, acceptable, right? So like in Northern Virginia, where I am, or we are right now, parents know play. Right.
Yeah.
And so play therapy is a lot of people are doing play therapy here. But when I was in Mississippi, it wasn't. And so really having those conversations and being upfront with parents about what you do and don't do.
Yeah.
So I've had parents here too, who want me to teach them how to study, like study skills and executive functioning. I'm like, so this is how I do this in this way. And this is how I've seen it be beneficial. And if you're wanting something that's more directive, I'm happy to provide you resources.
Yeah.
I also think that a lot of times when people are referred from physicians, CBT is really big. And so they'll be like, well, my pediatrician said I need to get them in CBT. And so then I have a conversation about how what I do is different than CBT and it, like understand what those differences are and say like, this is what I do. And I do think this will be beneficial. If that's something, if you do want CBT, I'm happy
to
get you a referral. Just being really upfront. And I don't try and say like one is better than the other, but this is what I do and why I do it.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
The other thing that I talk about from the play therapy perspective is about how they should disclose information to me about their child in session. So that, you know, that's not something we announce in the waiting room. It's not private or confidential. Also, I know your kid has heard you say this before, but sometimes your child will worry how I'm interpreting that. So it would be better if you asked to speak to me really quickly, or I think I talked in here, Dr. Sue Bratton has kind of a worksheet that you can use about sharing information. Like, do you have any big concerns? Has anything big happened this week? That type of stuff. So they could write it down for you and you can, so when they check in, right, they could have their folder, they can write it in there, and then it gets to you before the session to see if you need to have a quick parent consultation. A lot of my parents will call and leave me a voicemail or text me on my work line or through the portal, right? Like if there's a big concern, so I'm aware of it ahead of time. I encourage them to avoid email, but I do have it in my professional disclosure statement that email is not confidential. If they choose to share information over email, I won't respond to information on email. So I don't actually often respond to their email, but I will follow up in person so that they're aware of that. So it's not, so they don't think I'm not getting the message, but I want to abide by the lack of confidentiality in emails. But it's inevitable parents are going to say, when they drop them off.
Yeah. I try and minimize that as much as I can.
I try to minimize as much as, And I do follow up with the kid. You know, like if the parent just shared something that was really challenging for them or embarrassing or really hard for them, as we walk into the session, I share with, what mom shared with me really doesn't change the way I feel about you, but it sounds like it's been a hard week for you. So I'll acknowledge it, but I'm not asking them to talk about it. I'm not bringing it into the session, but I want them to know it doesn't change the way I view them, because I think kids worry that we're going to see them very differently based on that.
Yeah. No, that's a great.
That's from Sue. That's something I learned from Sue.
Dr. Sue Bratton.
Dr. Sue Bratton. Yep.
Yeah. No, that's because they do. And I think part of the reason, and I explain this to parents too, is like, we're really great. Kids are great observers and not great interpreters.
Yep.
And so they may fear that it will change our view of them or that they've done something terrible. They're a bad kid. And so I really try and help parents understand that also.
Yeah.
There was something else, and now I can't think of it, but I have had like, I did want to share this. I had my first ever play therapy client, and they were really young, like really young, like three. And
I have another one.
Oh, yeah. But so we're in there, and I'm sure we had just like learned limits or something. And I'm trying to set this limit for this child as she's cutting her hair. And she cut her hair, cut herself some bangs. Later, Dr. Bratton, Sue was like, you know, you can just push, stop her and then set the limit. I was like, oh, okay. But that was a hard thing that I had to come out and talk to parents about.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and I was so scared and nervous. Mm-hmm. And the parent was like, oh, yeah, they do that all the time. I was like, oh, thank God. Like, oh.
Sometimes they don't do that all the time. And it's like,
I'm going to get so family sorry.
Pictures yeah. or something like that. So.
Yeah. So that was a tough, like, coming out of session. And I was glad that I had prepped them, like, yeah. listen, like, things happen in here and they could get messy. And, you know, I do my best to keep them from getting hurt. I've had a kid, we used to have a.
I was going to say injury is something you need to, like, if someone gets injured, this is how we handle it.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, we used to have. A big, like a tree trunk almost.
Yeah.
With nails and hammers.
At UNT, at their training facility. Yep.
And a child hammered their finger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we had to go get a Band-Aid. But.
Oh, yeah. I had a kid who had to get stitches. So you're.
No. No. What happened?
It's a whole different story. But they fell into something and hit the corner. And.
Oh.
Had a gash.
Oh, geez.
And there was lots of blood.
Yeah, head wounds.
Head wounds bleed a lot. So, yeah. So they, you know, but so it is important to talk about
the prep
like
parent.
Injury. You know, sometimes injuries do happen in the playroom. We take a lot of precaution, but they do happen just like they do at home. This is how we'll handle it. The other thing I was going to say, so there's two other areas that it's really dependent on who the kid is and kind of their personality. But sometimes I'll talk about ending the session early and like how we handle that and the support I might need from you for your child. So if they tell me they have like a really kid who is really strong-willed, who can be really defiant sometimes, you know, and we kind of walk through ending a session, but sometimes kids just aren't going to be compliant. And if we get to a point where I can't keep setting a limit, right? And I need to come to get you, what I need you to do is come. I don't want you to try to get them to follow rules. I don't want you, right? Like what I'd like you to do is come get your child and have them leave the room with no repercussion. So that's really hard for parents, right? Like it's not the lecture when they get in the car, you need to listen to Miss Christie, anything like that. What we want to teach them is when this rule is set, right? And there's follow through to this rule. I'm not comfortable picking your child up. And because our relationship is different than a parent relationship, it would be helpful if you picked them up and took them out of the room for me. Even if they're kicking and screaming, kind of like you would at a friend's house or something like that, I just might need you to do that. I'm not thinking differently of your child. And then if we need to adjust time so we can give them more time to be able to leave and transition independently. Yeah. I can say this has only happened once in my career.
Yeah.
So I started in practicing in 2012. So I've only had to do this once for one kid in all of these years. And I've practiced all of these years, except one. I've only had to do this once. So it doesn't happen often.
The child wouldn't leave?
The child wouldn't leave. And I needed a parent to come pick the child up and get them to leave the playroom.
Yeah, I haven't had that happen. I have had to, if they weren't abiding by a limit and I ended the session.
Yes, but actually getting them out of the room. I've only needed a parent to come in once. So it doesn't happen often, but I do prep parents because we can't be predictive when it happens.
Yeah.
The other thing is about entering the playroom. So I do talk to them about some kids are going to enter freely and some are going to be more apprehensive. You know your child best. You might be able to predict if they're going to go in or not go in. They also might very much surprise you. But let's talk about how we handle that. I don't want them to feel coerced or manipulated into the playroom. I want them to walk into the playroom pretty freely. The kids that I work with who do have like attachment disruptions and other stuff, parents might enter the playroom with them. And they might spend the first session or two in the playroom just out of complete fear of abandonment and other stuff. And so I have a speech on either end of those about if that's not the case, and we're just talking about transitioning in and they have difficulty transitioning, I don't want you to force them. I don't want you to manipulate them. I'm going to reflect. I'm going to try to help. We might start off, instead of you in the waiting room, we might start you off in a different, like actually in a therapy room, so that the child gets to freely go there and I can actually do therapy with you there, talking to you, whatever, to get them to go into the room. And that's when I have been in private practice more than like an agency. So if it's a group of private practitioners or my own private practice, that might look like I'm doing therapy in the waiting room. So you're just not really sure about me. Yeah. Like I had a kid hiding under a blanket once and would whisper to the mom to talk to me. Right. And we just used it as a therapy session. And the mom was just shocked about how this kiddo finally, it took us three sessions. So we had three sessions in the waiting room. She was the only one in the office. So we didn't have to transition out of a waiting room. And then she came at a time that was more popular. And so then we started in a therapy room that was the therapist wasn't there that day. And so I got permission from that therapist to use her therapy room as a waiting room until we could get into the room. And then when she did come in the room, she only stayed 20 minutes. That's all she could handle. She couldn't take being away from mom. So like even talking through what those scenarios would be like, if it's the opposite, which is what I get more frequently working with kids who have relational trauma and disruptions, is they have a hard time transitioning away from their caregiver.
Yeah.
So I have a conversation with the caregiver about if this happens, you're welcome to come in the playroom. I don't want you to manipulate them to play with objects, whatever. You're really just there as their security.
Right.
If they bring things to you, you can engage with them. I want you to be normal. I'm not judging you as a parent. I'm not doing any of that stuff. I just want them to build trust with me in the space. And then what we'll do is we'll slowly transition you to closer to the door, then sitting outside of the room, then sitting halfway down the hall until you're all the way in the waiting room.
Yeah.
And then once I had a kiddo who needed a transition object. So he was afraid. It was a kiddo that was in foster care and now had been adopted. And his primary caregiver just left him somewhere and said she was coming back and never showed back up. Aww. And so he had this real fear of being left. Totally understandable.
Right.
It happened to him before, right? So it's not far-fetched. It's a reality. And so he asked to take mom's keys. So mom couldn't leave the space. So her keys would come into the playroom. I would be very attentive to where keys went because I did not want them to not have keys at the end of the session to get home. He felt comfortable. And sometimes we had to go check a mom or check on a parent or a caregiver. And that's also something I might express if I'm working with relational trauma, that we might come out and check on you. And then the goal is to get them back in the room. And this is just part of the therapeutic process. This is about them having more confidence in themselves, having more trust in your relationship, having more trust in our relationship. I'm not going to hold your child hostage in the playroom.
No.
That's never my goal. Right. And so I'm going to ebb and flow with your child. So if they need to check on you, if they need to tell you something, if they need to show you something, that's okay.
Yeah.
Show your interest and then go back to reading your book or go back to whatever you're doing. And then we'll kind of ebb and flow that way.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing I talk with parents about too, is that it's not a punishment and it's not a reward.
Correct.
And so it's really important.
And I do that with teachers a lot.
Consistent.
If you're in school settings.
That it's important to be consistent. Because that happens sometimes. It's like, okay, fine, you're not, or like, you have to go to play therapy today. Like, I'm going to tell, you know, it's like, no. Like, we don't want this to feel like a punishment or something that you only get if you behave a certain way.
Yeah.
The other one I always, and I try and share it at the beginning, like at our intake, is my goal is for you not to come, right? So like, my goal is to be out of a job.
Yep.
Helping them kind of, I think, in this day and age with insurance and money and all of this, sometimes it feels like you're just doing this to make money. And so I want to let them know, no, this is important. And this is sometimes how I might see change. And I'm always going to check in with you. You are the expert of your child, outlining what termination looks like before we even start. It's just like, what does this look like? And what do I want termination to look like? What I hope I, you know, like have three sessions that way we have a conversation about it and let it go, because it's really hard when there is no termination and it just is pulled.
I share with parents, oftentimes children don't feel like they have any control over relationships ending. They just end. Like people move away. It's the end of the school year. You and grandma had a fight, whatever it might be. They might feel abandoned by their biological parent. They didn't get to say goodbye to their biological parent, stuff like that. And so I do think talking about termination in that parent intake and what you hope that to look like could be a really important component. I actually now have it in my professional disclosure and they have where they have to initial next to it that they're going to give me so many sessions of termination. And then if they're like, this is not working, I'm like, okay. And let's remember, for your child, we want to make sure relationships end healthy. And people always question that. But I've had, when I've used that with parents or caregivers, they've been like, oh, that's right. Okay, I'll give you one more session. I said, remember, we agreed on three. I will be okay with at least two. I just don't want the time we tell them
to be the only time.
I want them to have a time to work through those emotions that might be coming up. So that's why we say three sessions. It gives the child a chance to emote happy, sad, scared, frustrated, disappointed, whatever the emotion is. And then another session where we're together and then one where it really ends.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be mindful of that for kids because they don't, and parents don't understand that. So even just sharing why we do it that way can be really helpful for them to have buy-in about the termination process.
Yeah. I think like the more you can kind of like lift the veil and just be like, this is why. And this is, I think it makes sense to them. And so that's what I try and do with parents is I try and help it make sense to them.
Yes.
And so whether that be what you're doing and talking about ending of healthy relationships or me kind of relating it to what it would be like for an adult, I think that's the biggest thing that we're trying to do is help them understand the rationale.
Yep.
Because then it's easier to buy in.
Yep.
I think. And just prepping them. It doesn't necessarily mean that these things are going to happen. And if they do, it's okay. And this is what I hope we can do with that.
And then the very last thing I share with parents before we end is sometimes you can have therapy remorse that you may feel like you shared too much in here and that you may leave and then have like an internal emotion related to that. Like I'm embarrassed or she must think we're a mess or whatever it is. Please note, I'm not feeling that way at all. There's nothing that people share with me that I like go home and think, oh gosh, this person is so, you know, like messed up or this family needs so much support. That doesn't happen, but that is a normal feeling. So if you go and I share that in parent intakes in, or in parent, not intakes, I do say it at the end of the parent intake, but when I do parent consultations, I'll say that because sometimes they'll disclose a lot of their emotional struggle with what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not their therapist. So it's not like we've had time to process all of that. And so I just want them to know how I hear that. And I often say what I hear is that you're struggling and you're needing support. And it just helps me know how to better support you in the future.
Yeah.
And so I like trying to be really reassuring, very partnered in the sense of we're a team working on this. It's not you alone or we're working against each other. I want us to be working on this together.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks. This was awesome.
I know. I'm sorry. This was quick and dirty. If you guys have questions about any of this stuff, let us know. We're happy to expand. We'll do a Q&A at some point.
Yeah.
Questions that we get from our audience. So if you want to send us an email to playfulbeginningspodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
Yep. And you can also, if you leave a review or like this, you can leave a question and we will try and get to them.
We'll kind of tally them for a while.
Yeah.
Unless they're directed in a podcast that we're covering or if there's a question that will lead to a whole podcast, we'll accumulate them and then we'll have like a Q&A time so that we can get to your questions.
All right. Well, thanks, Christy.
Thanks, Maggie.
Yeah.
Bye, y'all. Bye. See you on the next episode.